pipe up because I don't do a lot of these. You know, you're talking, you know, 5 to 15+ hours of reviewing a case on the average in order to get to recon. And it comes in one of two ways for me. Someone comes to me with a closure and says, hey, Julian, I don't think this is right. So I have, you know, an intake with a client that's depthy. I have a reviewing of the documents they have. I have to go request the documents. I have to look at the file. I have to follow the process. And either for a rescission because I think it's premature that's going to trigger temporary disability, or, God forbid, I actually have to calculate some of the temporary disability to make sure I'm asking for it right. You're talking a handful of hours at a minimum, and that is not seen by the department because what you see is a request and the insurance company providing the documents. Or I find documents, it's, you know, 20 pages at most, but it takes an effort to get to there. And or the other scenario is someone comes to me with a compensable claim, oh, I just want an attorney to hold my hand. So I'm reviewing the discovery as it comes in every month just to see what's going on and looking at it, and maybe there's a time loss issue, maybe there isn't, but if I'm getting to a time loss issue, you know, sometimes over the process of a couple years, I've won. I swear it's been 10 years I've been monitoring this claim. So that by the time I get to closure, it's over a long period of time that I've had staff and myself monitoring that claim to get to where I'm at. So the $500 does not, we would need to have another, if you decide to go with just a base fee and then someone being able to request something else, as opposed to it being tied to compensation, we would want to discuss that. I will point out your math that if you look at $5,000 times 30, what is that, $1,500? Did I do my math right? $1,500? What the cap, when the statute was changed, the cap for temporary disability was $1,500, and that was clearly not sufficient, and the statute, you know, then came in and got rid of that. So, you know, we're talking money that's less than what the cap used to be. And so if someone shows other effort, or as I said, the basic, you know, stuff that you and your office have to do just to get to recon, those dollars are probably not sufficient. And I'm probably not the best one to talk about that because I don't have a really, I'm an appellate attorney. I only have a few cases. I don't have an ongoing concern. So we would perhaps want to have more of a discussion about that, maybe canvas a little bit more of the attorneys who do this to get a better idea of what the actual cost of getting to that would be. So I'll make that comment.
Julian, this is Jennifer Milliman from ARU. Did you say 500 times 30?
Well, it's 30% times 5,000. Isn't that $1,500 plus the 500? Am I doing my math right?
Well, I was trying to clarify, so I got a calculator. I just wanted to make sure. You said 500 times 5,000.
No, the top fee here, you have 5,000 or more, is 500 plus 30% of the compensation. So if you got your client $5,000, you would get 30% of 5,000, which is, I believe, $1,500, then the 500. And so I wanted to point out, now I granted that gets bigger the more time loss you get, but I just wanted to point out that everything below that is, you know, sort of less-ish. You know, it's on the line of what the cap was before, regardless of how many hours you actually spent to get that.
Okay.
And then again, I would point out that there was a case I had up at the Court of Appeals that had to do with how do you calculate the average weekly wage. And maybe it meant, you know, like $25 a week. But when you did that over a long period of time, plus what was important is the PPD calculation makes a big difference what the average weekly wage is, because it's multiplicative at that point. So, you know, you can have a lot of effort for getting what seems on the surface a small amount, but over the life of a claim may make a difference in the future.
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate you sharing with us the perspective. I see a hand raised.
Yeah, this is Ted Hoyes.
Hi, Ted.
I just want to echo some of that, what Julian said, since that's sort of my big question about these rules, other than maybe I also have concern about the use of due and payable. Is that being maybe too restrictive for what Dancing Bear and the statute uses in terms of being obtained? But aside from that, I'm just curious as to how that $500 base fee was arrived at, trying to think of that if I successfully obtain an extra $500 for a client through writ of consideration proceeding, that my fee would be, you know, $550, and I'm just really struggling to figure out how someone can do it for that little money. Because that client has to at some point walk in your door. You have to, or talk to them on the phone, or whatever. You have to get those records. You have to go through those records to even find out whether or not there's a, you know, discrepancy. And that can't take what is essentially an hour or an hour and a half of work. I just have never been able to even come close to doing that. Some are straightforward in the sense that, you know, they're not complex legal questions, and there's not a lot of, you know, there's no legal research or anything like that involved. But it does take time to, you know, ask the client, identify the issue, confirm the issue through the record, organize, you know, make sure that when you request reconsideration, you're not going to reduce the temporary disability. I mean, it's not something we can just check and send off through the mail. And then get an order back saying, oh, by the way, you lost, you know, your client 3 weeks of temporary disability, and they're going to deduct it from a permanent disability award now, or something along those lines. So just the risk itself seems out of proportion with this idea that you get $550 as a minimum fee. I mean, we're looking at that, but it doesn't go up super quick. Like Julian pointed at $5,000, you're looking at a $2,000 fee. And for me personally, like, I don't understand the policy incentives or the reasoning behind tracking with the amount. If the goal by the legislature is to encourage representation, and accurate and competent representation to obtain benefits, to make sure insurers are processing and closing claims correctly and awarding the correct amount of temporary disability benefits, then I don't really necessarily understand. I mean, it'd be great if I got, you know, my client $1 million and I get 30% of that. That'd be awesome. I'm not sure that I would be entitled to that, though. That might be considered sort of a windfall situation. Not that that ever happens in workers' comp. But it's more often the opposite. You know, we go through the file, we look at it, and all right, we'll get them an extra month, and that's worth, you know, maybe a grand of temporary disability. And so now I'm looking at that, and I'm like, okay, so now I'm going to get, you know, $700, you know, and that's, you know, that's just unrealistic, honestly. That's not in line with my experience of litigating a temporary disability issue before the WCB either. You know, those awards are, from my experience, always higher than what's on this, even at the top of this list here. So that's sort of something to consider when, if you are going to impose this base fee idea. Disagree with the tying it to the amount of compensation, but also disagree with that base fee being so low.
Okay. Yes, good. Thank you, Ted. Kevin Anderson.
Kevin Anderson, a defense attorney with SBH Legal. I just wanted to comment briefly. I wanted to echo kind of Elaine's support and say support for this proposed rule. Talking with the attorneys in our office, and we kind of like the matrix that was there. It was not overly burdensome to calculate the amounts. It was something that our clients could kind of wrap their heads around pretty easily. To the issue about whether the 500 base is enough, I think it's important, even though the statute says this is awarding a reasonable fee, this isn't, the assessed fee is not the only fee that's going out there. It's the assessed fee plus the out-of-compensation fee. So on the example, $5,000 of time loss and a $2,000 fee, there's also the 10% out-of-comp in addition to it, so it's not just a $2,000 fee. And the only other issue that had come up in this discussion and in our office was dealing with the rescinded closures and how to calculate that fee. And just in our discussion, I haven't really floated the idea around our group too much, but maybe some calculation of a set fee based on the worker's TTD rate, like, you know, 4.35 times the weekly time loss or the weekly average wage, so that the assessed fee on a reopened case would roughly equal about a month's worth of time loss. I think that would be about consistent with where the matrix is for additional benefits to the worker. So those are just kind of a few quick thoughts from myself and attorneys in our office. But I appreciate all the work that WCD has put into the proposed rule, though, and again, would generally support where this is going.
Thank you, Govan.
I'm sorry, this is Melissa Douglas from Travelers. I don't know how to raise my hand, so.
That's okay.
Okay, thank you. I guess I just wanted to clarify from what Kevin was saying. My reading of the proposed rule is specifically to reconsiderations orders regarding an explicit modification of the temporary disability dates. He was talking about rescinded closures, and I guess I just wasn't getting that from this.
The way that the current draft rule is written, it would only apply when there is an order on reconsideration issued that does modify the temporary disability dates. And I think that's what Kevin was referring to. I'm also hearing that there may be some thoughts that it should be expanded to apply when the notice of closure is rescinded. So it'd be different circuit beyond what the proposed rule is currently drafted to say. So I think you're hearing correctly, and I think what you're seeing in the rule is also accurate.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think we've gotten some really good feedback. I'm not seeing any other hands or anybody coming off of mute. If there's, and we can come back if anyone has any thoughts later in the meeting. We can also come back to this. But I think you've given us again some good things to think about. Anybody, any department staff want to follow up on anything related to this issue before we move on to the next one? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody. Fred, I had a question for you. In the agenda, I think you've got a break at 10:30. Do we want to go ahead and do that, or do we want to just maybe hit the next issue first and then consider having a break?
Yeah, I should have said something earlier at the beginning of the meeting, but sometimes if we are making good progress and it looks like we may not need the entire time, if we actually go all the way to noon, then a break seems appropriate. But if we're making good time, and I think there are not a lot of issues left, so maybe after the next issue we could reconsider and see how much progress we're making.
That works for me. If anyone does need to step away or take a break, I mean, feel free to do so or to let us know. We can adjust accordingly. So the next issue number two in the issues document is just kind of a follow-up. It's not, we do have a rule in the current rules that says attorney fees under Division I rules must be paid within 14 days of the order awarding the fees becomes final. And it was just a question that if we were to adopt some sort of rule to implement 6563831, would that rule need to be adjusted for timeframes? The board has a similar rule, but it does provide an additional section providing that an approved fee shall be paid within the time required for payment of the compensation out of which the approved fee is to be paid. And so it's just a matter of, while we have you here, if there is a change or a clarification that wouldn't be needed, we want to raise that as a question. Otherwise, we can move on to the next issue. I'm scrolling through the boxes. I don't see anybody. Okay. So we'll change gears a little bit with issue number 3. This is regarding attorney fees for reclassification. And this was not something that we talked about in October. This is a new issue. Just want to find it really quick. Oh, there we go. So we currently have a rule providing for the attorney fee under 656277 when the worker's attorney, I'm going to pull up the statute really quick so I don't misstate anything. If the worker is represented by an attorney and the attorney is instrumental in obtaining an order from the director that reclassifies the claim from non-disabling to disabling, the director may award the attorney a reasonable assessed attorney fee. And we've had this rule in place since January 1, 2016, and it provides for a range for a reasonable hourly rate. Well, actually, I'll back up. The rule provides that the fee will be based on the reasonable hourly rate multiplied by the time devoted by the attorney to obtain the reclassification order. And the original range that was in the rule was $150 to no more than $400. That was increased in 2018 to $275 to $400, but it has not been changed since then. And in looking at it, you know, there are several attorney fees in the statute and in the board's rules that are adjusted annually based on any increase to the average weekly wage. So we were looking at, is this one that we should also have that annual adjustment? So there's a built-in method of increasing that range instead of us going in every few years to look at it. So we'd like your feedback on that. The next increase would be July 1st of this year, based on what the changes in the average weekly wage would be. Anybody have any thoughts? Oh, hi, Julie. Sorry, I didn't see your hand.
That's okay. Because I speak a lot, I'd like to give other people the opportunity. I will say that the board is paying up to $450 for appellate matters at this point, and so the $400 cap is a little bit low. I certainly would agree to a regular change of it, because the board awards fees order by order, so they will naturally sort of creep up, perhaps not as much as they should, but at least naturally they creep up with each, about every year they sort of do this increase. But so it has a regular updating feature because it's order by order, whereas the department doesn't. So, you know, the 2015 legislation came into being because some statutes fees were capped for like 14 years, and so it would be helpful if you had that regular cap. I will note that the perhaps you want to increase the $400 as part of this rule, not just add the cap, because in 2015 is when it was set. So I note that under the state average weekly wage, it would be just slightly over $525. So perhaps maybe you want to move it up to $525 and then add the regular increase of it.
So just to confirm what I'm hearing you say, so increase the $400 to $525. and also do the annual adjustment if there's an increase in the state average weekly wage.
Right, thereafter. Right. Okay. That would bring it current. That would bring it, I did the math with the state average weekly wage. That's what would bring it current.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Not seeing anybody.
The Sealing Schooler with Safe Corporation.
Really?
Hi. We would agree an annual adjustment makes sense in this case to increase that amount. The $450 Ms. Julian commented on is as an appellate rate and before the board. I think in this instance it makes sense to start at the $400 and make the adjustment, and it will naturally increase on its own. Increasing it to $525 is well in excess of what the board is even granting claimants' attorneys in their attorney fee awards and from their fee statements. So I think that would be far in excess of what we're seeing at that level, and not commensurate with the type of dispute this is, the reclassification of a claim.
Sorry, just make a quick note. Thank you, Elaine. Anybody else? Kevin Anderson, I see your hand up.
Just a quick question. For my own curiosity, has the WCD kept track of how many attorney fee awards have been awarded for reclassification disputes? Or is that something you wouldn't be able to find out?
I don't believe we have been. We have the number of cases that come before us for reclassification review and the number that we reclassify. I don't know that we keep track of the specific attorney fees.
Okay.
I'm looking at Steve or Jennifer in case I'm misstating that.
This is Steve Passantino. I'm not aware that we track that or if that data is available, but I did make a note.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so it sounds like annual adjustment is agreeable, but what the starting rate is something that we need to look at, whether we stick with the current amounts or increase them. Okay, well, moving on, I think those were, well, I shouldn't necessarily assume that. I think those were our big issues. The rest of them are still issues we want to get your feedback on, but hopefully not as lively. Issue number four is really a matter of should we move the language in the current Division 30 rule that applies to fees and penalties within the reconsideration proceeding to Division 1. Up until now, there's been language in Division 30, but the only fee that's really applied to is that 10% fee under 656268. And now that there's potentially going to be more than one fee, the question is, should we move that language that's in 436-0300-175 Section 4 to Division 1 and maybe leave a cross-reference in its place? We don't want to necessarily make changes or assume how our users of the rules would feel about it, so we do want, if anyone has any thoughts about that, we would appreciate hearing them. Chris, I see you.
Yeah, so I don't know that I had necessarily have any thoughts on it, but I'm curious as to what the department sees as the effect of moving the rules. What difference would it make?
From my perspective, it's just a matter of having the attorney fee rules living in one place in Chapter 436, then spread throughout. I don't think it would make a substantive difference. it's more, does it, I guess the question, does it make it more user-friendly to the end users of the rules to have everything in one place? And maybe in this case it's not. But at one point in time we had, when 656385 was first effective, we had attorney fee rules in divisions 1, 10, maybe division 120. And so every time we had to make a change to the attorney fee rules, we had to do it in three different places. And so we decided at that time to put them into division 1, where they could be in one place. Maybe this is a situation where the fees are so different it doesn't matter. And that's fine too, but.
Again, I would just say, from my perspective, I think you should do whatever makes you feel most comfortable about the rules. I don't think it's going to make a difference for me. If you don't think there's a substantive change that is going to affect the attorney's fees that are awarded anyway, then I don't really care, so long as there's some indication in where the rule used to be that says, hey, this rule is now over in Division 1.
Okay. Julian, did I see your hand up as well?
Yeah, but I was going to echo Chris Moore's thing, Chris Moore's statements. It doesn't seem like it's substantive, and perhaps in the recon rules there could just be, I think, in the process that, and then attorneys, some reference that an attorney's fees are determined under anything applicable under 001. I do like the fees all in one place, though, I will say, because it makes it easier to find when an attorney fee is due.
Okay. Thank you. Any other thoughts on that specific issue? Okay, I'm not. Sorry, it takes me a minute to go through and look at all the pictures just to make sure nobody's raising their hand. So sorry for the delay. So issue number 5 on the issues document is not related to attorney fees, but looking at in Division 1 rule number 3, there has been over the years some confusion about whether or not the rules that are in Division 1 that apply specifically to hearings apply to hearings on reconsideration orders issued under 656268. And as long as we're looking at Division 1 rules and possible revisions, I added to the draft rules just a sentence in Section 2 that these rules do not apply to hearings on reconsideration orders issued under ORS 656268. Just to clarify that when the department issues an order on reconsideration under 656268, the appeal goes to the hearings division of the board and those rules apply. What's in Division 1 specific to hearings apply to a completely different class of hearings. And so just to clarify that. If anyone has any comments or thoughts about that.
It's Julian, I'll just say thank you. The court does the best. I saw Kramer and I did not argue that your rules apply. I just wanted to clarify that, but the court struggles with a very confusing double jurisdiction, so your sentence of clarity is helpful. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Yeah, I didn't think that any of the parties had necessarily argued that to the court, but I did see in a couple places they referenced rules in Division 1 that just simply don't apply to hearings on reconsideration orders. So anything we can do to help clarify that division between what's before the director and what's before the hearings division, we'll do that. So just going to make a quick note. Any other thoughts about that? Okay. So the remaining issues in the document are really housekeeping issues, trying to clarify and maybe make things a little more user-friendly in looking through the Division 1 rules. I can walk through them. I don't know if we necessarily need to, or if anybody has any thoughts on anything else they saw. In a lot of places, it's adding, in the applicability rule, adding subheadings to make it more clear what each section of the rule applies to, and the rule titles themselves, as we add more rules about attorney fees, having just the statutory reference is not necessarily helpful, especially if you're someone new to workers' compensation or if you're a worker or employer looking at the rules. So I added parentheticals to the rule titles just to see, to try and help navigate that. At the very end of the draft rules, there is a Division 60 rule, and that's regarding claim classification. The process for that is in Division 60, but there was one spot that refers to the attorney fee under 656277, which we talked about in a previous issue. And in the Division 60 rule, we've added a cross-reference to the Division 1 rule to help the reader just know that there is another rule that applies to that fee. But beyond that, if anybody has any questions or comments or wants to go back, if you've thought of something about a previous issue, I welcome that. Otherwise, I think for next steps, we'll need to go back and consider the feedback we've received today and determine what our next steps are. Obviously, there's some things that we need to think through more. Just looking through my two pages of participants, I'm not seeing that anybody has a hand raised or has come off of mute. We appreciate your feedback in this process. I appreciate you taking the time to participate this morning. I think that we're getting a little bit of a gift of time. I think we had this meeting scheduled till noon, and we obviously do not need to take that long. So, Fred, did you have anything you wanted to talk about in terms of closing?
Yes. If you joined us after the start of the meeting, you're welcome, but we may or may not have recorded that you're with us. So if you did join late, if you want to just stay after we close the meeting for a moment or two and let me know that you were here, and we can make sure that you're copied on the minutes and recorded as being here, that would be great. Or you can just send me an email, fred.h.bruyns, that's B-R-U-Y-N-S, at dcbs.oregon.gov, and then I'll make sure to get you on our roster and keep you informed going forward. So we will do minutes, and I will post an audio recording of the meeting. We don't typically post the entire Zoom video recording just because it's probably going to come in at, you know, somewhere between a quarter and a half of a gigabyte, but it is public record. If you'd like a copy, I can find another way to get it to you. Probably we have some special, an FTP program that I can send it to you. But yeah, thank you very much for being here. Feel free to send, maybe Kathy, I'll need your agreement on this, but we often provide a little extra time after the meeting for people to send additional comments. So when would we need that in terms of our planning for getting proposed rules filed?
Well, I don't think, you know, if people want to take until the end of next week, so that'd be February 4th, if you have any follow-up comments that you want to share with us in writing, I think that would be fine. I don't think we're under any tight time frames necessarily to get things moving, so. But thank you, everybody, again. We do appreciate your time and your feedback, and we appreciate the help in getting this figured out. So.
Thank you very much.
Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks again, everyone, and goodbye.